The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Good evening again. So tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about equanimity. It's one of those words, right? Equanimity. I don't know how many syllables it has, but it's one of those words that just doesn't feel like a word that's, you know, in our usual vocabulary, and it feels like very kind of technical. Of course, for those of you who have been practicing for some while will recognize this word. There's a number of ways in which we can describe it as having a sense of steadiness, of stability in the mind and in the heart. If I can make this distinction, we don't necessarily need to make that distinction, but a steadiness and a stability that's in the face of all conditions, no matter what is arising. So all of the inner experiences, emotions and thoughts and outer experiences, things that we hear, that we see, that we feel. So a certain type of unshakability or a strong sense of inner balance, not so readily thrown off balance. And it's kind of, and maybe it's also about seeing the big picture. Certainly a support for feeling balanced is to see the big picture. Maybe in the way that when we, it's natural, at least I find myself doing this, that when I'm outside and there's a little bit of a hill, even if it's just a minor one, there's this kind of like wanting to go up to the top of the hill and to stand at the top and see how things look and get a different view. And when we're on that top of the hill, even if it's just a more like a mound or a knoll or something like this, just to, we're still connected to what's happening, but we have a bigger perspective, a bigger view. And that's generally accompanied with a sense of a little bit more ease, a little bit more, oh, look at this. Ah, that kind of a feeling. If I can be that vague. So the experience of equanimity, it is a spectrum. It's not like an on-off switch, like we are steady and balanced and connected and spacious on or off. But of course it's part of a big spectrum, and I want to honor all aspects of our lives. So even though equanimity, we talk about it in the Buddhist practice, we want to honor and respect having an emotional life too. In the sense of we can ask ourselves, as a human being and as a practitioner, do I know both ends of this spectrum? That is the richness, the fullness of being alive and having an emotional life, as well as the richness and fullness of equanimity, when we're not filled with emotion in such a way that it's affecting us in a way that we're maybe a little bit off balance. So we want to both be in contact with our emotions and to recognize and feel them and experience them, as well as have steadiness and balance. And sometimes we're a little bit off balance as practitioners. The key word here maybe is practice. So as we're practicing for equanimity, we will notice there are times when we're just lost in the emotionality. And there will be times when maybe we've kind of slipped off of equanimity and slipped into indifference. That is, when there's a certain amount of coldness or cut-offness, disconnection, and not open to our experience Of course, that's what it means to be a human being, is we have this whole range. So we can have this emotionality, and we can have indifference, but or disconnection, but equanimity is with being connected, experiencing whatever there is to be experienced, and to still have some uprightness, to have some impartiality to it, to not be pushed around, so not to be shut down or cold or removed, or and not to be dull or gray in some kind of way. So some reason that when we think about equanimity, there might be some of this hesitation, or it might not sound very attractive. If we think that it is like indifference, or if we think that it is about this coolness or disconnection, but to recognize that it's not that, it's really about being connected. But there might be another reason why equanimity might seem to be, we might have the idea that it's not so desirable or attractive. And that is, we might have come to believe that our sense of having some juiciness to our life is about having drama. There might be, maybe it's not so clearly thought out in that way, but we might have the sense of the drama of trying to get something or get rid of something brings a little bit of pizzazz or excitement to our life. There's that next thing we have to get, or that next thing that we have to get rid of, that somehow gives our life purpose or meaning. Or I'm sure if you were to ask anybody this, they would say, no, that's ridiculous. That doesn't give my life purpose or meaning, trying to get things or get rid of them. So it might be a quiet little belief. Maybe it's an underlying belief that isn't completely formed. But just see if there's this kind of like, oh, equanimity sounds uninteresting. If there might be some of that operating, because equanimity has a beautiful sense of aliveness, a beautiful sense of vitality, a sense of openness and connection and spaciousness. It's really unlike the word equanimity. I wish I could think of a better word. But it's really, it's quite a supportive and wonderful experience. So, of course, equanimity, the sense of balance, or maybe this also seeing the big picture, or is makes life easier. Makes life easier to navigate if we're not being pushed around by our experiences. And whether our experience is in response to an external event, maybe something that's happening in the news cycle, or something that happened at dinner, somebody said something, or maybe we were cooking dinner and it didn't turn out quite right, or whatever it might be. Or whether it's an experience, an internal experience, our emotions or our thoughts. If we have some equanimity, it helps us to not lose our way, to help us to have ease with some of these things that otherwise might be a cause for some unease. So it's certainly, equanimity is a way in which we can not be blown around by the worldly winds. Some of you may know there's these list of 8 worldly winds: praise and blame, fame and disrepute, gain and loss, pleasure and pain. Of course, it's not possible to only have one side of those pairs and not the other. For me, I find it comforting that the Buddha came up with this list of these 8 things. This means that thousands of years ago, people were concerned about these same things that we're concerned about now. And that equanimity, cultivating, developing, experiencing equanimity, is a way in which these qualities don't have to be problems. These experiences, rather, the praise and blame and pleasure and discomfort. But this path of practice is not only about having a pleasant life. It's not only about making our life more comfortable, though it certainly does that. But this path of practice is also so that we can establish in the mind those conditions that help us to be with some of the deepest existential issues that humans have. Help us to find freedom, peace, love, and compassion when some of these existential questions come up. The meaning of what we're doing with our life, what happens after death, or some of these types of things. But it also helps to create the conditions, and maybe this might be some of the most important, in which there can be some letting go, in which there can be some lessening of clinging, not being tangled up with anything. This type of letting go that's associated with liberation, that's associated with freedom. Because, of course, a liberated person, a person has some awakening, is not agitated. And so equanimity, of course, is an unagitated state. So practicing with equanimity is a way in which practicing with liberation, because the means to liberation, of course, are seen in the way in which we practice the end of liberation, of course, is shown up in the means. So equanimity is an integral practice on this way to more and more freedom, all the way to complete freedom. Again, for those of you who have been around the Buddhist scene or have heard lots of Dharma talks, know that equanimity is part of a lot of lists. Equanimity is part of the seven factors of awakening, the paramis, the brahma-viharas, the jhanas, the progress of insight. And I certainly am not going to go into all those lists, and that you don't need to know the contents of those lists for what I'm talking about here, but just to recognize that it shows up in lots of different Buddhist practices. And one thing that these lists have in common is they all are supports for liberation, and that they have, usually when we have these lists, that there's an order in which they go. And equanimity is usually the last in the list. And if we understand these lists, there's a number of ways we can understand them. And one way is as a progression, is that equanimity comes at the end. And so we might explore that a little bit. Why does it come at the end? And what are the types of things that come before it? And so I'd like to suggest that one of the reasons it comes at the end is so that the other practices can be a support for equanimity. It's often not something that we can just dip into all the time. Instead, there's other practices that can be a support for that, just the natural arising of equanimity. So in really broad brush strokes, we can say types of practices that support equanimity are practices that support wisdom and practices that support well-being. We need both of these, wisdom and well-being, to help create the conditions in which equanimity might arise. So in some ways, that we can consider that some of these wisdom practices are to help us to see things differently, to shift our perspective, so that things that might, in the absence of equanimity, feel like big problems and big disasters, maybe if we're equanimous, they're not such a big problem. So to shift our perspective, wisdom can support that. As well as to, if we, these practices that support well-being, if we have a reservoir of well-being, it can act like the keel on a sailboat. The keel is that big, long bit that's underneath the boat, and that helps prevent the boat from tipping over, even though there might be these forces of the wind coming in. There's this really deep keel that can help it from not tipping over. So in some ways, having a reservoir, having a reservoir, this is kind of the word I wanted, that's, that we can dip into, that we can drink from, is a way in which that can act like this keel. In the same way that if you maybe don't know how to swim and you get thrown into the water, if you don't know how to swim, you're going to thrash about more than you need to. But if you get thrown in the water and you have a life jacket on, poof, you just pop up to the top, and then maybe you just need to not thrash around as much, and you can swim and find some safety. There's some sense of you don't need to panic or spend as much time underwater. So maybe in the same way, having a sense of well-being is really a support for equanimity. I mean, even without my saying this, we all know it's easier to be equanimous if we have a certain sense of contentment. If we have a certain sense of happiness and love that's available, independent of the conditions that we find ourselves in. So how, maybe I'll say that, and I'll talk a little bit about some of the practices for equanimity, some of the supports for equanimity. But for all of these practices, it's so helpful to be start where it's easy, to begin where it's easy, to begin with how things are now and in our daily life. Are there simple, easy places that we can practice equanimity without having to build a lot of supports? But right now, are there some ways? It might be that there's a holiday coming up with a lot of food, and maybe there's some this year for 2020 will be different than past years. Is there a way in which that we can bring some ease to any aspect of that, whether it's that this year will be different than past years, and maybe there's some tenderness around that, some sadness about that? Is there a way in which we can just not allow ourselves to tumble into the uncomfortable feelings that might be associated with that, but instead to feel the support of what is available? Or maybe we're having a meal with others, and it's and we're so happy to have a meal with others that we feel like, and it's filled with delicious food or something, and we are able to, rather than just feeling like we want to eat as much as we can, or tell all our stories, we maybe haven't had a chance to tell our stories as much of things that have been happening and are talking nonstop. And is there a way in which we can just bring to, okay, is there a way that I can bring some balance to this, some steadiness to this? Just like set that intention. I don't feel like I'm giving very good examples here, but maybe you can find some good examples for yourself and your life. Is there a way in which there's pumpkin pie, and perhaps you love pumpkin pie or apple pie, whichever you love? Is there a way in which you can see the pie, acknowledge that you love it, but take the time to make sure that everybody has a piece of pie and everybody has what they want, and maybe tidy up the kitchen a little bit if it needs it or something before allowing yourself to have some, like allowing yourself to have the space to feel the desire for the apple pie or the pumpkin pie, and to not have the pie immediately, and then maybe go back and having it. Again, I'm not sure these are good examples. But I'm confident that you can come up with this. If we set the intention, there's lots of little examples in our daily life in which we might have some more equanimity. So what are some supports that we can do? That, and as I said, having this reservoir of well-being. And I want to make a note that well-being is not the same as pleasure. There might be things that are pleasant, but they don't really fuel us. They don't fill up a reservoir. If we're just chasing after pleasant moment, then that's its own type of suffering, chasing after the next pleasant moment. Well-being is more a sense of contentment, sense of ease. Well-being doesn't even have to be pleasant. It can be perfectly neutral. If we're having some difficulties, it might be nice to have some neutral experiences. And there might be a way that to realize that our well-being is not dependent on this or that condition. Is there a way in which, with meditation, we might notice that there's some contentment or some stability, and to really allow ourselves to feel that. Allow ourselves to feel the sense of connection. Okay, I'm here. Allow ourselves to feel the sense of stability, even though there might be some restlessness, whatever stability there is, to feel that. And to not be dismissive of it. And to have this experience over and over again during meditation, of having survived yet one more meditation period, even though we might be feeling terribly irritated or restless or falling asleep or whatever it might be, whatever hindrance might be active for you. And to have that experience over and over and over again is different than understanding that our happiness isn't solely dependent on the external conditions. So a way in which we can bring some awareness to our experiences during meditation, as well as intentionally cultivating perhaps some loving kindness, which can bring in this real sense of open-heartedness, some goodwill, this warmth, this just a sense of delight to be cultivating some loving kindness. So a specific practice. Our reactions to loss, our reactions to maybe if we disrepute, somebody says, we hear about, somebody says something about us that's not flattering, or is really different. Our reactions to that is really different if we have this reservoir of loving kindness that we know is available, that we can dip into. And again, developing and cultivating this is a process, and it certainly takes time. It certainly takes time, but it is possible to cultivate some of these feelings of well-being and loving kindness, contentment, stability that can really support us. And then some wisdom practices that we might want to bring in is there's a story of this Zen master Hakuin. Excuse me for a moment here. This Zen master, Hakuin, who lives in the village, and there is this teenage girl who becomes pregnant. And her angry parents demand to know who the father was, and the girl doesn't want to say. So she tells a lie and says that it's the Zen master, Hakuin, is the father of the baby. And when the outraged parents, when they confronted Hakuin with their daughter's accusation, he replied simply, "Is that so? Is that so?" So the baby is born, and the parents bring the baby to Hakuin and say, "Here, here's your child. You take care of this." And he says he demanded that he take care of it and say, "It's your responsibility." And he says, "Is that so?" And so he took care of the baby. He took really good care of the baby. And then after a number of months, this teenage daughter felt really bad that she had lied. So instead that she said who the father was. So then the parents went back to Hakuin, the Zen master, and said, "You know, terribly sorry, we made a mistake." And asked if he would return the baby. And with profuse apologies and as they explained what had happened, and he says, "Well, is that so?" And he gives them back the baby. So there's a number of reactions we might have to this story, but the way in which that the Zen master was able to say, "Is that so? Is that so?" It's a way in which we can create a little bit of space between our experience, and with that space can be a little bit more balance and some equanimity, a little bit more steadiness. So rather than falling headlong into whatever our experience might be, whatever the conditions might be, maybe we can remember to bring this little, these three words: "Is that so? Is that so?" It's a way in which can help create the conditions in which equanimity can arise. And maybe I'll just, there's a number of things that we can do to support equanimity. There's a lot of things. Maybe I'll just offer one more here at the end. Just to kind of like intellectually engage the mind as a reflection practice. I talked about these eight worldly winds: fame and disrepute, praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and pain. Just to sometimes consider when we are experiencing something that's uncomfortable, do we really think it's possible to only have one side of those pairs? Did we really think it was possible to never experience loss? Did we think it was possible to only experience gain? Did we really think it was possible to only experience comfort and never pain? Of course, the human experience has both sides of those equations. Of course it does. And sometimes just a reflection like that, like, "Okay, this is uncomfortable," can help us bring us a little bit more into balance. So some other practices are a number of reflection practices, including how things change, as well as some cultivating some well-being, such as generosity, just noticing that the sense of well-being that arises when we cultivate that. So part of the reason why equanimity is at the end of these lists is so that we can create the supports for them. And so that and when equanimity arises, it helps create the conditions so that we might be unagitated and be able to have the deepest letting go. The deepest letting go that leads to liberation. So equanimity, this word that has too many syllables, but is actually a beautiful, warm, connected experience. That can be a tremendous support for our lives and for our practice, so that we can be a support for others. Thank you.